Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Different Strokes for Different Folks, to find common ground and take it to the next level with David Clark here on Blog Talk Radio. Each week, the show will encourage you to keep an open mind and prepare to open the door to new understandings. We will have an exciting array of diverse guests who will point up the fact that we are all spiritual beings having a human experience. Now your host, David Clark.
Welcome to Different Strokes for Different Folks, where we will indeed be finding common ground and taking it to the max level. I'm your host, David Clark. I'm a spiritual adventurer, and I suggest you become the same. When you keep an open mind, you'll come to see that despite our seeming differences, we're all basically the same. You'll also see where you can find common ground so that you can relate rather than compare yourself to others. Now tonight, my special guest is Dr. David James. He's a transformational hypnotherapist in Los Angeles. He's a former police detective and Episcopal priest, and is the author of 3 books on the inner journey. He has a PhD in clinical psychology and graduate degrees in spirituality and human development. As an expert in the mind-body relationship, David works personally with clients and others, offering compelling presentations across the U.S. and Canada. His latest book, Discovering Your Magnificent Mind, Finding Freedom, Prosperity, and Health, will be released this year. Or I should ask, is it out yet, David?
No, it comes out in October.
Very good. Okay. Well, you must be looking forward to that.
Yes, it's always fun to have a book released and see the interaction you get with people. I always enjoy that.
Sure. Well, let's start off, and let me ask you, what does a transformational hypnotherapist do?
Well, as a hypnotherapist, people come for any number of reasons. The number one reason that people tend to come to hypnotherapy in the United States is to stop smoking. And the second reason people come usually is to lose weight. And then from that point on, it kind of breaks down into various areas where people want to accomplish things or overcome a fear or a worry or change a habit. The transformational piece, though, is that my intent with every client that I work with is that they realize kind of the wonder of who they are, and that by the time we're done, not only have they stopped smoking, but they have a better sense of just what you talked about earlier, being a spiritual being, having a human experience. And so they have a new take on life as well. It's not only just the particular addition or subtraction, if you would, of what they came for, but rather that as people as on this journey, they experience a new sense of themselves as well.
How do you accomplish that?
Through the use of hypnotherapy, through my years of experience, through getting to know them well, understanding what their issues, their programmings, their biases, their fears, their joys, their celebrations, their worries are, and getting them in touch with their higher self and teaching them to do that in ways that they can access it themselves, not only when they're in my office, but in any context of their own life.
So it sounds like you give them the tools for them to employ as they go on in their lives after they've worked with you.
Absolutely, because all hypnosis is self-hypnosis. You know, my job is to be guide, guardian of the process to help them make the kinds of transformations they want, but ultimately it's the client that puts themselves into the hypnotic trance, into that state. And so the better that I can teach them to do that, when our series of work together is done, then they have lifelong skills that they can use to their advantage.
I see. Now, you were trained as a cognitive psychologist, isn't that correct?
Yes, right, yeah.
So what made you decide to make the move into hypnotherapy and neuro-linguistic programming?
Primarily the phenomena of resistance that we encounter. We all have within us a capacity to protect ourselves, to resist change, even if it's change that we want. You know, it's we call it homeostasis. It's an almost innate ability to block change. And any time that we're on the threshold of that kind of change, our self-defensive mechanisms kick in. So, for example, somebody that wants to quit smoking, that there are, we know, you know, so many reasons and potentials and possibilities when it comes to smoking, that nicotine addiction is kind of just a tiny little piece of the whole puzzle. You know, there's lots of issues about identity and stress and relationship with other people. So when we get on the threshold in our lives of being able and willing to make a profound and powerful change, then our self-defensive mechanisms kick in, this homeostasis, this resistance. Now, with psychotherapy, the goal in talk therapy is to talk about the issue again and again and again and again and come to a matter of understanding, of insight, what we would call cause. So the image that I use when you're dealing with resistance is like a wall that blocks your path. In psychotherapy, you talk and you talk and you talk and you talk, and what you do is you remove the wall a brick at a time. First, you kind of break the first one out, and then you see a little bit of light on the other side of that, and then the next one and the next one. Well, with hypnotherapy, by putting the client in state and going right into the subconscious mind where the resistance lies, we're not trying to dismantle the wall. We just hop over it. In other words, we are oriented towards symptoms and symptom relief as opposed to psychological cause. And that's the biggest difference for me in my own practice, is helping people understand what to do with resistance and how to overcome it.
Can everybody be hypnotized?
Everybody that wants to, absolutely. You know, there was a time when we thought there was a percentage of the population that was unhypnotizable. What we've come to understand over the last 30 years or so, though, is that there are, at the risk of running stereotypically here, there are two types of people. We tend to operate either out of our left brain or our right brain. We tend to be analytical and oriented towards thought and the complexities of the mind, or we tend to be more oriented towards our bodies and our feeling world. And, of course, all of us are a mix of both. You know, hopefully that's the well-balanced person. But typically we tend to lead with one or the other, you know. And so in the past, the kinds of people that were, quote-unquote, not hypnotizable was people who were strong analytical types. And so we've learned how to induce trance in them. And so now that the bottom line is that if anybody wants to be hypnotized, they can be.
Wow.
Yeah.
So what are the types of things that people usually come to see you with besides weight loss and giving up smoking?
Well, particularly, I work with people in two areas in my practice. The first area is in, for lack of a better term, success work. People who find themselves with a vision for who they want to be in their lives or where they want to go in their lives. And as a result of that, they just seem to need the boost to make the transition into that person, into that goal, into that success. And so I have Hollywood record producers, and I have quantum biologists, I mean, like all across the spectrum, people who come to me because they want to take a next step towards a much larger vision of themselves and their experience. So that's the first kind. And then the second type that I tend to work with are people that have significant health challenges. Several years ago, I read a book called You Are the Placebo by Dr. Joe Dispenza. And that revolutionized my practice because he introduced me, or reintroduced me really, but in a very readable and understandable way, he introduced me to the power of the mind-body connection when it comes to illness and disease. He articulates in this book over and over and over again how people using the power of their mind only are healing themselves from cancers and tuberculosis and MS and ALS and irritable bowel syndrome and just a whole host of that. And so a good example of this for me is I had a woman come to me. She's a client of mine with ALS, with what we call Lou Gehrig's disease. And her neurology had degenerated to the point that she had to be pushed into my office in a wheelchair. She came in because she wanted help with depression, and hypnosis is really powerful in regards to helping people alleviate the symptoms of depression. And so we worked together a bit, and I said, you know, if I might suggest, there are some possibilities here that we might be able to bring some relief to the symptoms that you're struggling with as well, physiological symptoms. Would you be willing to do that? And she is ever the optimist, and so she agreed, and so we started working. And like I said, when she came to me, she started in a wheelchair. She had to be pushed in. Now she brings herself in using a walker. She's walking again using a walker. And my goal is the next 3 or 4 months to have her using a cane. So significantly reversed are the symptoms of neurological impairment in her. So those are the two areas, and maybe it's because I live and work in the Beverly Hills area, but one is for people who are seeking to be and do more with their careers and their professional and personal lives. And secondly, people who are experiencing health challenges and helping bring relief there.
That's wonderful. Well, I've had Dr. Bernie Siegel on as a guest several times.
Oh, yeah.
And he also maintains that we are the ones that heal ourselves and that we have all that power within us and that it's simply a symptom of some distress or disease within ourselves that's brought about the physical or mental disease, as we label it. So no surprise here, and I'm really happy to hear that you do that kind of work with people. Have you had other successes?
Yeah, I've had success in helping people with irritable bowel syndrome. I've had success in helping people walk back asthma symptoms. They no longer need inhalers or pills or that kind of medicine to help with their asthma. So, yeah, and I've got a saying that anything that the mind creates, it can also recreate. And I agree with Dr. Siegel that, you know, so much of our physical state is a result of our mental state. And so I just find it really fascinating and exciting to do this. I just love seeing results with people who come to us for this kind of help.
Well, it certainly has got to be exciting for you. And I love to hear stories like this. Now, you do help with relationship problems as well? And
yeah,
financial situations?
Yeah, again, under my axiom of anything the mind creates, it can recreate. There is not an area in our life where the mind isn't involved. And so one of the great revelations, and again, I'm so grateful to people who have kind of gone out ahead of us to do some of this work. One of them is a man named Greg Braden, and he has done a lot of work. He's a scientist, and yet he's done a lot of work connecting ancient wisdom traditions and contemporary science. And he talks about all the advances that quantum physics and neuroscience has made to help understand the crawl of the appearances to the contrary. We are not material beings. We are vibrations of energy, even down to our littlest bit. And that not only are we energetic in and of ourselves, but that also that we are part of an energy web. That I'm connected with you, even across these miles, there is some connection between you and I that can be measured in a way that makes a real and authentic kind of connection. So when we engage with couples in relational issues, we can, if you would, blend and merge energies. In addition to kind of the more basic couples kinds of therapies, issues of, you know, he doesn't say this when I need it, or he doesn't touch me here, or she doesn't support me with that. I mean, kind of the basic couples counseling. But when you get into transformational work, we're looking at entering energy fields with people and helping them be able to experience and touch and enjoy energy, and seeing how thought and the power of thought and the power of the mind can recreate energetic connections as well. And then, of course, the same thing with finances, because finances are all, money is energy. You know, we happen, like Dr. Joseph Murphy said 25, 30 years ago in Los Angeles, he said, you know, we're fortunate that all we have to carry around are checkbooks, that in ancient times people used to trade cattle and sheep, you know. So, you know, we're lucky all we have to do is carry checkbooks. Well, nowadays we all have to carry ATM cards, debit cards, credit cards, but we're still dealing with the fundamental issue of money, of currency, of wealth as energy. And so entering into the energetic field and working with people to find out where blocks are to relationships, blocks are to abundance, these are all part of the fascinating works. I tell young people who are training to be hypnotherapists that I envy them 30 years from now, that the kinds of things that are groundbreaking for us today will be kind of old hat, and they will be on even more powerful exposures and experiences. So that would be kind of the answer to that question, I think.
Okay, well, thank you for that. There's certainly a lot of interest in self-improvement in this world, and a lot of folks that call into my show are experiencing some of the kinds of challenges that we've just been talking about. I quite frequently have on psychics, I've had other hypnotherapists on the show, and people are always interested in talking about relationships and career challenges, that sort of thing. So it's nice to know that you can help with those things as well. What makes that so exciting for you, and why does it work?
In what regard? Because, I mean, you mean the whole field? What makes it exciting for me, or in a particular area?
Well, I know the transformational aspect is very exciting to you.
Yes, it is. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Well, and like I said, what we're understanding now is that there is nothing that the mind doesn't touch, that the mind isn't interlaced in, isn't interacted with. You know, we've always said that we have kind of two parts to the one mind, the conscious mind and the unconscious mind, or the subconscious mind. And the conscious mind is 10%. That's where the logic and the reasoning and the decision-making and the willpower and all of those really day-to-day kinds of activities occur. And the rest, the 90%, is the powerhouse. It's where habit and memory and feeling and bodily function and body-mind connections, all of these things happen. So, like I said, there's not one area of life that life does not interact with mind. And so what's really cool is being able to step out into a place where maybe somebody's never considered the possibility of mind power, and seeing that light up within them and empowering them so that they can participate in a life-changing encounter within themselves. Because, again, it's all that they do. The person does it within themselves. My job is to guide that process.
Well, we know there's a lot of interest in the law of attraction that's talked about all the time these days. Can you tell us a little bit about how your work helps people tap into the pathway of prosperity?
Well, yeah, you know, the law of attraction, at least as we understand it in kind of contemporary iterations, says that we attract, as energetic and vibrational beings, we attract not what we want. We attract what we are. So if the energy and the vibrations that we put out are of lack, of want, of disease, of fear, of judgment, of pain, of disregard, then that's going to vibrate back to us. So in our work, we change the fundamental beliefs in that subconscious mind that are oriented around that area so that there is a more resonant vibration and attraction to what the client wants. So if we are attracting what we are, not what we want, then we work at the level of foundational belief to help the realignment with source energy into the vortex using the law of attraction kind of language. And so we work with foundational beliefs to change, if you would, the transmitter, what we're transmitting out to the universe and then achieving back, receiving back.
So if I'm stuck in a place of lack and wanting, you would help me not necessarily discover the blocks, but find a way where I'm more at peace within myself and in a place of, well, I'm not sure how to put it, but I guess I'm going to need to ask you to help me out a little bit here to reframe what you were just saying.
Yeah, okay, here's a good example. Say that a client is of the opinion that they would like to be a multimillionaire. However, they grew up in an environment like I did, for example. My parents were Depression-era kids. They grew up in the 20s and 30s. And for them, there was never enough money. And so we heard things regularly, like money doesn't grow on trees. It's better to save a penny than spend a penny. Any of the kind of axiomatic statements about lack. Well, this created a foundational belief deep within the subconscious mind, so that when the client says, I want to be a multimillionaire, I want to be powerful financially to be able to create the life I want. But within them, there is an overriding belief that says, no, money is to be held onto. Money is not to be flashy. Money is not to be thrown around. Money is to be banked. Money is to not get. Or, you know, somebody might grow up in a particularly conservative religious household and they misinterpret the phrase that's in the Bible and they teach their kids, money is the root of all evil. Well, first of all, that's not what it says. But at any rate, if you believe in your deepest foundational unconscious belief that money is the root of all evil, then there's a conflict with the conscious mind that wants prosperity. And the rule of the mind is that the stronger of two beliefs is what the mind adheres to. So my job in that regard is to help you go in and find out what the block is. Go into the subconscious mind and do a little bit of personal archaeology, if you would, and understand why there is such resistance to the possibility of prosperity. And in that, flip that switch off, if you would, and reinstate that money is actually a good thing to have, and the more you have, the more you can help, the more life you can enjoy. And so we change the vibration, if you can see the difference there.
Yes, I do.
By co-opting the fundamental belief, understanding it, and then co-opting it, and changing it into a more empowering belief, then the subconscious mind brings that to pass.
Well, I'm also interested in hearing about things like using hypnosis to connect with spirit guides, past lives, higher selves, that kind of thing. How does that work?
Well, again, then, this is kind of the fascinating new work that we do. You know, that for the longest time, people have been able to go into trance states and experience past life regressions. I mean, we teach that at school, how to how to experience, you know, the influences of a past life that continue to make itself felt in the current life. And or there's classes on how to meet spirit guides or higher selves. And for the longest time, there were kind of two schools of thought with this. One was that that all of that is a metaphor. The higher self, the spirit guide, the past life is a metaphor for deep psychic potential, possibility, and reality. And it found its high point, if you would, with Carl Jung and his collective unconscious. Or the other theory is that past lives, spirit guides, higher selves, are all literally, actually true. And depending on, again, whether you viewed it all as metaphor or as explicit reality, the hypnotherapist's job was to use your language to help you access that part of yourself. Well, again, now that we know this energy web exists, there's a man who talks about John Kehoe talks about the fact that that we access the energetic web, and in doing so, that we make connections with the energy of, for example, Jesus or Mary or Buddha or Krishna, that we can actually visualize and imagine connecting with them. And in so doing, as we kind of fine-tune our perceptions, we use the energy web to make the connection with that. And that, you know, quantum physics tells us that, you know, we now know that there are not only 3, 4, 5 dimensions, there are 11 dimensions of reality, and that we live in a multiverse, not a universe, but we live in a reality where there are several universes operating all at the same time in its own dimension and space-time and configuration. And so by putting the client into trance, we help them experience the space-time connection that past lives are not so much past lives as they are ongoing lives in another dimension. And so we help them encounter that in that regard. So if you can see kind of the difference between the old binary experience of either metaphor or literal reality, we now see that it's an energetic possibility that we can engage in across space-time dimension. And that's kind of really exciting when you can make that connection.
Sure it is. Yeah, well, I certainly agree that time is an illusion and that linear time as we perceive it is not the reality. I'm wondering how important it is to come to terms with stuff and baggage that we carry from so-called past lives that may be bogging us down in this life. What is your opinion on that?
If it is indeed, then I think you should use every tool at your disposal to live the fullest life that you can possibly live. If there are resonances that of energies, of patterns, of experiences that have no explanation in this current life, there's no reason for it. There's no imprint of it in this current life, and yet the memory is there. The experience in the etheric memory is there, then absolutely, you know, we have these tools to help make that happen, and we understand better that it's not mythology. We understand better that it's not just metaphor, but that it's actually lived experience within an energetic web of all of creation.
Well, I would like to go to the phone lines now, if you don't mind. I do have a caller. I had another one that we lost. But let's see if they have some questions they'd like to ask you. And then I'd like to talk about your book. And I would also like to talk about your own personal journey, if that's okay with you.
Absolutely.
Okay. Okay, I'm going to area code 802. What is your name, please?
Heidi.
Hi, Heidi. How are you tonight?
I'm okay. How are you?
Good. Say hi to Dr. David James.
Hello. How are you, Dr.
Hi there. Hello?
Heidi, are you still
Hello?
There?
Yes, I'm
Yes,
here.
Now we can hear you.
There we go.
Okay.
Do you have any questions or comments that you'd like to make, Heidi?
Well, actually, my question is, my husband passed away some time ago, within the last year, and he had some business property with a business partner, We actually have it up for sale, and, you know, it's struggling. It's a bed and breakfast, and we're just hoping that it's going to sell this year before the season is over or before the end of 2016, and I'm just wondering if that's a pipe dream on our part or if it's really going to happen for us.
Yeah, well, I think that from a hypnotherapy point of view, from an energetic point of view, everything that exists as potential can exist in reality. And so, again, back to the law of attraction and the notion that we attract what we are, not so much what we want, that if you are in a place where within yourself, not geographically, but if you're in a place within yourself where you have opened all of your energetic channels up to attract the buyer, that it will come. One of the things that, of course, Esther Hicks and Abraham talk about in their law of attraction work is that we very often get caught up in the timeline.
Right.
You know, and so, you know, the encouragement is to, you know, I would put you into trance state. I would put you into a very relaxed, natural state of attention and focus, and we would experience the feeling of it having sold and how good it would be to have it sold and what psychological relief having it sold would bring and financial relief having it sold would bring. And that in doing that, what we're doing is we're aligning you with the energies of sold, not to be sold, if you get my drift. And so in doing that, the likelihood of the universe then is going to be able, because there's not that resistance to selling. And that would be one of the questions is, you know, in addition to, you know, an iffy real estate market, you know, what are your resistances to selling this? Did this bed and breakfast mean something to you in your relationship with your husband? That is there a part of you that doesn't want to let it go, or are you so
we were all talking about selling it, and I think that truly I'm ready. My husband was ready. I actually think the resistance right now is coming emotionally from the business partner, and I think it's an unconscious. You know, yes, he's got it up for sale. We have it up for sale. Yes, I want to sell. But I think there's an emotional part of him that isn't ready to let that go yet.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, and what all you can do, there's an old saying, the old saying in personal transformation work, all you can do is all you can do, right?
Right.
You can't change this business partner. But what you can do is you can have your own energy and in such alignment with the property being sold,
okay,
that you're removing those resistances, that the universe can work with that, you know, and you might be able to visualize and imagine again if you were in trance. You know, we don't try to cast spells on people, so to speak.
No.
But you might visualize or imagine that, you know, in a dream, your business partner all of a sudden realizes why they are resisting, and or you know that whatever the fear is the business partner has around it, you know, dissipates. You might visualize or imagine that your business partner's heart is right in the center of the heart chakra, kind of icy and cold. You might visualize and imagine that your love, your energy, your light, your purpose, your grace, your work melts that fear. And so work on yourself, keep your energy clear, drop any resistances left, and then visualize and bless your partner as he or she begins to let go of the things that are blocking them too.
Okay, perfect. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Hello?
Heidi, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Okay. So good.
No,
well, thank you for
I'm
that help.
Yes, thank you very much. I appreciate the input.
No problem. Thank you for calling in. Well, that leads us to another question, and that is, what's the best way for people to get in touch with you? Your website?
Yeah, my website is davidjameshypnosis.com. One word, davidjameshypnosis.com. And there are email opt-ins and phone numbers and everything else is right through there. And we can work with Skype. I have clients in Dubai and Manhattan currently. I've worked in Paris and London before, never leaving the comfort of my office in Los Angeles. Distance is not an issue. As long as there's a cell signal or an internet signal, we can do the work together.
Beautiful. Well, let's talk a little about your upcoming book. I love the title of it.
Yeah, it's really kind of a introductory book to someone who knows there's got to be more to living life than they are currently and how to access the mind to do it. I call it Discovering the Magnificent Mind. In the first chapters, you know, we talk about, in many ways, in greater depth, the kinds of things that we talked about today, about how the mind works, its function, examples of how the mind-body connection works, of placebo, of prosperity work. We talk about all of these things. And then in the latter chapters, I turn it a little bit into a workbook. And we actually have practices and exercises that I invite the reader to do. It's as if they were working with me in the office and help them understand how to access this magnificent mind. So like I said, it's kind of mind 101, if you would. I give lots of credit liberally throughout the book to all these people that I've talked about here, Dr. Joe Dispenza, Dr. Greg Braden, Dr. Wayne Dyer, even Bernie Siegel, as a matter of fact, I refer to him in the book. So in some ways, it's a very readable. I wrote it not quite with a journalist's eye, but I really wrote it with the eye of the average person who has just a little time each day to read and absorb and practice something.
Well, I'll look forward to taking a look at that book when it comes out. Who's publishing the book?
Hay House. Hay House is the largest.
Wonderful.
Yes, the largest publisher of self-improvement and metaphysical books in the world, and so it's Hay House.
Yes, and it's very difficult to be published by them. Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah. I'm grateful for the opportunity to do that.
How did you manage to get your book into Hay House? Did you have an agent?
Yes, I did.
And well,
yeah, I've published two other books over the course of my career, and had very different experiences with both of the first two books in the publishing process. The first book was published in a very traditional manner. The second book was more of a on-demand kind of print. It wasn't self-publishing per se, but you would go to the website and buy the book, and then it would be printed and sent to you. So I decided when I went to this book, I needed something that had global reach. And obviously Hay House was to my mind, the most exciting possibility. And so we went after an agent and went with that through them.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Well, do you want to talk a little bit about your other books?
The previous two books, so they were written 20 years ago and 15 years ago, were on the spiritual life of men. Back in the late 80s and early 90s, there was really a lot of energy around the men's movement and what it meant to be kind of an authentic, spiritual, vibrant man. And both of those books were related to that. They weren't one was very practical in a theological sense. The second book was more of a study guide to reflect for men's groups and those kinds of things. So, like I said, that was 20 and 15 years ago. I can't believe how old I'm getting, how quickly time has passed. So the new book is really kind of a launching in that new direction of of helping people understand that the mind is not mysterious at all. It's very knowable. The image I use is that our conscious mind is the conductor of the orchestra, the subconscious mind, that 90% mind is the orchestra, or the image of the Joseph Murphy used to use, the conscious mind is the captain driving the ship, but the subconscious mind is that incredible engine underneath that moves it all forward. So my goal and mission in life is to help people understand that the mind is magnificent, and they have one. They were issued a magnificent mind at birth, so to speak, and that we all develop in the ways that we do, but that it's never too late to begin to use our minds to our best good and to the service of the world.
What can we do to remain more conscious and present to the moment?
I practice and teach meditation. Matter of fact, I taught last night. Every Wednesday night, I teach a group here in the Los Angeles area. I've been teaching meditation for 30 years. And very often, people confuse meditation with religious experiences. There's a strong cultural lean into Buddhism, for example, when you talk about meditation, or Hinduism. But it doesn't need to have those cultural overlays. Instead, what we are doing in meditation, when we are at the kind of meditation I teach, the awareness kind of meditation, is we are training our mind to be present to this one unrepeatable, wonderful moment in all of its glory, in all of its pain, and all of the whatever it is in this moment. And when this moment's gone, we're present to the next one. And so consciousness comes through the developing of awareness, the development of awareness. And awareness comes through the practice of staying aware. It's really very simple. So, for example, with the breadth of and depth of the people who have been on your show in the past, I'm sure you've talked about meditation, and there's mantras and mudras, hand positions to hold. Last night I taught a new mantra. I said, breathe in with the words present moment, and as you breathe out, to the words only moment. Breathe in present moment, breathe out only moment. And for 25 minutes, I breathe in to present moment, exhale only moment. Now, that is from Thich Nhat Hanh, who's a Buddhist monk, interestingly, a meditation teacher. I took one of his teachings and distilled it. Consciousness comes by being present in this moment and staying present in this moment, recognizing that there's an aspect of the mind that the Buddhists call the monkey mind that's going to be jumping all over the place, thinking about the next television show, the last week's laundry that didn't quite go so well, the new girlfriend, the old boyfriend, the kind of mind jumping all over the place. They call it the monkey mind, like a monkey in a cage. And
right.
the meditation, the awareness training, is to let it go and say, if the mind goes away 100 times, we come back 101 to breathing in the present moment. And exhaling is the only moment. And by centering ourselves in this, we begin to enter the stream of consciousness that is beyond mind chatter, which is so prevalent. Again, neurobiologists tell us that we think about 70,000 thoughts a day. So on the one hand, as a hypnotherapist, I'm helping you learn how to use those thoughts to your advantage. As a meditation teacher, I'm helping you to learn how to put those thoughts aside, be present to the essence of reality, the stream of consciousness that's running through your life. So that's kind of in a nutshell how I approach it.
How important do you think it is for people to practice meditation if they're going to achieve awareness?
I don't know any other way, actually, short of severe trauma. I think, again, of Eckhart Tolle, who's a very famous author, his books, The Power of Now, and that series, he didn't come to this level of consciousness in his story through the disciplined practice of imagination. He was nearly suicidal. He was so stressed out that he was thinking about ending his life. And for some reason, consciousness broke through all of his anxiety, all of his pain, all of his fear, and opened him up to a new realm of understanding the presence of the moment. And in doing that, he found peace. that's the exception rather than the rule. People tend to need to practice being aware in this moment. That's the only way that I know. You know, now some people don't like sitting still meditation. For some people, yoga is a better way, or Tai Chi or Qigong. Moving meditations, or Aikido, a martial art that focuses on moving meditation. But the best way is the only way that we have available to us, and that's to learn how to be present to this moment. So whatever technique you use, but I do think it's essential.
Thank you. I agree with you. Absolutely. Well, let's talk a little bit about your own journey. Boy, you've had a remarkable history. Did you start off as a police detective or as a priest?
I was a cop first. My dad was a sheriff sergeant for the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department. And I, from a very early age, wanted to follow in his path. I joined police explorer scouts when I was 13 or 14 and hung around police stations and did ride-alongs and desk reports and all the kinds of things that interns do. And then as soon as I graduated from high school, I joined the Army, and I became a military police officer in what was then West Germany, before Germany was reunited, again showing my age here. And then when I was discharged then at 21 from the Army, I became a deputy sheriff with the LA County Sheriff's Department and served in law enforcement for 20 years. But then I always had this other piece of me, and it was what I would call my spiritual piece. And probably because of the influences in my life, one was my dad, who was a cop, and the other was my aunt, his sister, who was a nun, who was my best friend when I grew up. And I went to a parochial school and was involved as an altar boy and all these kinds of things. And so I had my life going on twin parallel tracks. And so after 20 years as a cop, I was very successful. I'd been a detective, a forensic crimes investigator, and a field training officer, and a sergeant, a first-line supervisor, and then a SWAT team commander. I decided to follow that other impulse, that other yearning part of my life. And I went to seminary. I left the police department. I went to seminary and was ordained an Episcopal priest and served for years and got my doctorate in psychology, because even as a priest, people were coming to me for counsel and advice, and I thought I probably should learn something about what to say and how to do it. And so I kind of gradually moved into that realm too. So for me, it's always been kind of a breathing in and breathing out, and I'm experiencing life as it is and life as I want it to be. So those are the two kind of tracks that my life has been on. And then, like I said, about 5 years ago, I rediscovered the power of hypnosis. You know, when you're in your psychological training and your PhD training, you get kind of an intro to it. But I was just struck 5 years ago with the power of this, and went back and did a fellowship and a diploma in hypnotherapy, and that's what's brought me to today.
Well, it sounds like a fascinating evolution.
It is, and one piece, and I always tell this to my clients too, one piece is always built on the next. I don't know that I would be the kind of person today without all the experiences that I've had in my life. And so, you know, my kind of no-nonsense approach in one regard, also peppered with my highly compassionate heart on the other regard. And like I said, it took all of the experiences in my life to bring me to the point that I am today, and I'm grateful to be here.
Well, that brings up another question. How important do you believe gratitude is in terms of raising our level of vibration?
Well, I think it's essential. As a matter of fact, one of the reasons, again, is because we know that what we vibrate, we attract to us. And so it's kind of a shorthand answer to say that if you are practicing gratitude, that the universe is going to respond with giving you things to be grateful for. And it's kind of a symbiotic relationship. But now we also know, again, thanks to these groundbreaking experiences and understandings in the neurosciences, that our very biology and DNA are affected by the way that we think. You know, every time you have a thought, your body releases a host of chemicals and hormones with every thought. And so if you're thinking stressed out thoughts, for example, or distressed thoughts or fearful thoughts, you know, and you're kind of in fight or flight syndrome, your body is releasing chemicals like adrenaline and cortisol in your system. And that is perfect when you're fighting the saber-toothed tiger for the 5 or 10 minutes of the battle, but not effective as a life strategy. But so many people walk around in that fight or flight syndrome, in that system where there's no ability for creativity, no possibility for prosperity, because they're so focused on survival. So gratitude as a practice actually changes our biology and allows us a greater sense of ease and well-being and creativity and flow and purpose and satisfaction. And so there was a monk, a Catholic monk in the 14th century. His name was not Eckhart Tolle, his name was Meister Eckhart. And he said, if the only prayer that you can say heartfeltedly is thank you every day, that will be enough. If the only prayer you can escape your lips is thank you, that can be enough. And this is one of those instances where this ancient wisdom from this man predates and predicts the changes to our biology, which then raises our vibration to attract the kinds of things that we want.
Well, it makes sense to me that if our thoughts can affect our biology, that we have the power within ourselves to make ourselves sick or better.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah. And so gratitude is a great way. I on my Instagram page yesterday, I put a little meme up. I said, were the first words upon awaking this morning, thank you? If not, that's okay, there's tomorrow. That's what I said. Are your first word today, thank you? If not, that's okay. Don't get down on yourself. There is tomorrow. But to start the day with the practice of gratitude puts your biology, your neurology, your spirituality, your psychology in a very different perspective than waking up and going, oh, my God, another day.
Right. Well, is there anything else that you would like to say tonight? We're coming up toward the close of the hour.
I'm very grateful to be here and to have this wonderful conversation. Like I said, I am on a mission, and that mission is to help people realize that most of us are operating from a mind point of view at about 7%. We are so routinized and habitual in our thinking that if we learn how to properly access, engage, and use the mind, that our lives could be quantitatively and qualitatively different than we ever thought was possible. And so that's why I grab every opportunity, whether it be on radio or television, to talk about these things. And I'm grateful for the opportunity to be with you.
Well, thank you for joining us tonight. Once again, we've been talking with Dr. David James tonight. And if you want to get in touch with him, you can go to his website at davidjameshypnosis.com. So thank you for joining me.
Yeah, you're welcome. I'm glad to do this. If you'd like to do any follow-up, please don't hesitate to be in touch.
Sounds good. So once again, we come to a close. Now we can pause and reflect upon the idea that we are all united through the diverse tapestry of our individual gifts. There's no real thing as separation except in our own minds. We are each unique expressions of the ultimate source of our beings. We are spiritual beings having a human experience who can and will have a spiritual experience if we let it be. Have a great week, and remember, whatever you dream, you can realize. Good night, and God bless everybody.